Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a girlfriend to join me and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between. Hey friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour. Happy Wednesday if you're listening to this in real time. I want to let you know that I'm so honored that you would choose to listen to our show today. There are a lot of voices out there, and I have a lot of voices I'm listening to. And so the fact that you would tune in today, it means a lot to me. This show, The Happy Hour, has actually been one of my greatest gifts to myself personally over the past couple of years. And I've heard the same from some of you, that you have learned so much from all the guests on the show. And I can say the exact same thing. I've been reminding myself and my friends that listening is one of the greatest ways that we can learn and lament and understand each other. I'm hoping that you find yourself doing just that today during the show, listening as my guest Gina Thomas shares her story with us. I actually read Gina's book, Separated by the Border, A Birth Mother, A Foster Mother, and A Migrant Child's 3,000-Mile Journey last year before my trip to the border with Tess Clark and Women of Welcome. I highly recommend her book if you're looking something to read and you want to hear more about her story after the show today. Gina and her husband served as missionaries in Mexico, and when they moved back to the States, God moved in their hearts to care for the vulnerable in their city. This led them to foster care. In our conversation, we talk about the story of her foster daughter, Julia, her family in Honduras, and how together they worked to have them reunited. Gina also shares important information about the ongoing circumstances at the border and the zero tolerance legislation that is still in effect today. I asked Gina some hard questions that you might be wondering as you listen to this. I hope you are encouraged and a little bit more educated through her answers today. Right now, this week, there's a campaign that's going on to advocate for the vulnerable children who are held in border facilities and those currently entering at the borders. Visit hashtag don't look away and hashtag for every child to learn more about how we can ask our state and national leaders to change the law that separates children from their guardians. Okay, here's my conversation with Gina. Hey, Gina, welcome to the Happy Hour.
Hey, Jamie, thanks so much for having me.
This is exciting because I've been wanting to have you on for a while just to tell the listeners how people sometimes end up on the show. A lot of times people are pitched to us, you know, like, you should have this person on. They're really great. They wrote a book or they're doing this. And then other times I come across a book, and I'm holding up your book right here. It's called Separated by the Border, A Birth Mother, A Foster Mother, and A Migrant Child's 3,000-Mile Journey. And I read it and I knew immediately I wanted to have you on the Happy Hour, and we have mutual friends. So this is how this all came together.
That was awesome. Thank you. That means a lot to me.
Oh, man. Our mutual friends, Tess Clark, who Tess has been on the Happy Hour before. If you want to go listen to her show, she's been on the Happy Hour. Great show. And then Sarah.
Yeah.
Do you know Sarah Cusada? I always struggle with how I'm going to say her last name right. How do I say it?
Casada.
Okay. So do you know Sarah Casada?
I do. Yeah.
She's lovely as well, and I need to get her on the Happy Hour ASAP. So I'm so glad you're here. So introduce yourself to my listeners.
Yeah, well, hey, everyone. I'm Gina Thomas. I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I work at a nonprofit which does poverty alleviation from a holistic development perspective with biblical principles. And I write as much as I can on the side. I've got two kids, one who's about to turn 9 and the other who's about to turn 5. Going a little crazy right now in quarantine, not going to lie. But, you know, we're very thankful for just our family, and the kids are pretty great. We have really great kids. So I'm thankful that I get to be their mom. It's a pretty amazing privilege for me. So
that's amazing. And did you say they're 8 and 4?
They are. Yeah.
Fun ages. They're starting to explore, starting to figure things out. Love it so much. Well, I want to jump in and I want to hear a little bit of your story because I saw your book. And first of all, all my listeners know I'm a sucker for good covers and I love the cover of this book. It's beautiful. So kudos to whoever did that. But I was immediately intrigued by your story for a couple of reasons. Number one, foster care is something that I have personally never done, but I have tons of friends who've walked through foster care, really, really have a heart for bringing foster kids back with their families, like reunification. And so I was immediately attracted to that. And then the whole title, Separated by the Border, I was immediately intrigued of how in the world is this, you know, white woman fostering a child from Honduras? Like what's even going on here? And I devoured your book. And so I want everyone to go get it. So you don't have to give away all the good stuff, but just tell me, how did your family even get entered into foster care and then foster care of a child who was separated at the border from Honduras? This could be 4 hours, but let's just jump in.
So it kind of starts in Mexico. My husband and I, we were missionaries there for 4.5 years. So we both speak Spanish. And our son, our eldest son, was born there. And while we were there, we were attempting to adopt. And
from
it was
the States or from Mexico?
From Mexico.
Okay, got it.
And every door was just kind of closed on that during our time. And then I started doing my master's degree through Eastern University, international development, and started really thinking about why am I so willing and so interested in adopting internationally, but I'm not paying attention to any of the vulnerable children in my own country. And so those questions really haunted me. And I look back on it now and I'm grateful that it didn't work out in the sense that I was able to open my eyes to a whole population of vulnerable children that I just really had kind of not looked at before. Mm-hmm. And so when we got back to the States, we signed up to do foster care. And that's, if anybody's gone through it, it's quite a process. It was 10 weeks of class. And then after that, it's a whole long process of home studies and all the things, right?
Which I need to say too, I want to interrupt you and say, you were very honest in your writing about foster care. And I appreciated that as being an adoptive mom that's gone through hard things with children that are not so easy to write about sometimes. And then B, watching my friends, you know, walk through foster care and seeing the challenges that the system has, and then the challenges that you have to come to terms with your own self that you that come to the surface. It's like, oh, I didn't know I had all this evil, crappy stuff inside me until I started this process. So I really appreciated your honesty with that a lot.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. You know, foster care in general, it's such a great area. And like you said, there's a lot of issues in the system itself. And then you kind of, once you get involved, you kind of submerge all these issues within yourself. And so one of the things I often say is we can't fully fight the demons, you know, in our world if we don't fight the ones that are in us as well. And so oftentimes that happens simultaneously, which is just overwhelming. But
okay, I'm going to interrupt you again because I marked a quote in your book. Can I read it? It's about foster care. Okay.
Sure.
I love reading people their own books. I think it might be uncomfortable for some people. I hope it's not uncomfortable for you. Okay. You said this. I was just like, yes, yes, yes. And I believe this is originally from a blog post of yours, but you said the gospel is both terrible and terrific because I am the worst of sinners and a daughter of the good king simultaneously. The gospel is both terrific and terrible because my foster daughter is a hot mess and yet a beautiful princess simultaneously. The gospel is both terrific and terrible because my house is a mixture of a yelling pad and a safe house. And I often feel like the strictest of teachers with sporadic moments of mother in love with her brand new baby. Fostering has brought me much confusion, but one absolute. I see my sin more clearly than I ever have, but I see the kingdom of God more clearly too. I was like, yes, Gina. Yes. Okay. So that's what I'm talking about with your vulnerability and honesty around foster care. So I keep interrupting you to tell you what I love about your book and I will shut up and let you talk.
No, thank you. That's awesome. It's always interesting to hear, you know, what resonates the most with people. So I love having my book read to me, to be honest. But yeah, so we started getting involved in foster care. We ended up going through the process and then had to kind of push pause on that because I found out I was pregnant with our youngest and then came back around to it later. So we started fostering in October of 2017. And so we were kind of in the system in the county and we had two girls in our home. And about that same time, little Julia was making her way up from Honduras through Guatemala and then Mexico to the border. Our paths crossed in February, so that was a couple months into foster care, when she was found on the streets by police. And she was then taken into Child Protective Services.
Where was she found, Gina?
She was found in a neighborhood.
I mean, in the States?
In the States, yep. In North Carolina, where we were living.
Okay.
What happened was she had, so let me back up a little bit and tell her story. She was traveling with her biological mother, Lupe, and her stepdad, Carlos. And when they arrived at the border, they were separated. So first she was separated from her mother because the smugglers, who they had paid quite a bit of money to get there, decided to take the mother as a hostage. And that turned into several different things. And there was quite a bit of tragic trauma that happened along the way, even before getting there. But her mom was taken hostage. And then Julia and Carlos were then allowed to go and cross into the United States. Well, once they arrived in the United States, Border Patrol then separated Carlos and Julia. And so Julia officially entered as an unaccompanied minor. And what happens in those cases is that they go through the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and then they're placed in the least restrictive housing that they can find. So usually a connection, a relative, a friend, someone that someone knows that they already know within the United States. And so those placements are kind of like foster care in the sense of those children then go to live with that family. However, unlike foster care, they're not given any stipends or anything. So that's, you know, that's part of that whole broken system that we talk about. So the family that she was living with was two single moms who had their own kids, and those kids went to school, and the moms worked. And so during the day, because she was a year younger than when school starts, so she would have started kindergarten the next year, she couldn't go to school. And the family did not have economic means to send her to preschool or to find someone to watch her. There's no stipend. There's nothing. So she would often be left home alone. And she's a sassy little girl. She's amazing. And so she would go find stuff. She would leave the house. She would figure out how to unlock the doors, leave the house, and go to neighbors' houses. And one day there was a neighbor that saw her kind of wandering around in different houses and called the police. And so that's how we got involved. Our social workers called us because they knew that we both spoke Spanish. And at the time, she didn't speak any English. So she ended up in our home. The thought was it was just going to be the weekend, and that ICE and ORR, Office of Refugee Resettlement, would come on Monday to court and pick her up. But that didn't happen. And then the following week, it didn't happen again. So then finally, she was like officially, you know, part of Department of Child Services. And we officially started fostering her. Along the way, so there was a lot of details about her story and her life, and even, you know, if her mom was alive and all that kind of stuff that we didn't know when she first came into care, which is pretty typical for foster care. There's a lot of unknowns. But then once we figured out that her mom was alive, and her mom had since escaped from the smugglers, made her way back to Honduras, we were able to connect with her and kind of connect with the Honduran consulate and figure out the different steps that we had to take in order to get her back. Because she was in foster care, you have to go through the court, you know, your county court, and the judge has to sign off on the child being returned to her home. And so we had to get a home study done in Honduras and like all these things that, you know, was just very, very complicated. And no one really knew what we were doing. Not just us, but like the social workers and the consulate, like nobody really knew what to do with this case. So we had to kind of learn along the way. It took about 4 months, and in July, got to travel back with her. My husband and I got to travel back with her to Honduras and see her reunited with her mom and brothers.
You guys, you got to get the book and read the whole thing because it's a beautiful story. And I'm thankful that you took the time to write it out for us because I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned here. And so I want to ask you a couple of questions that I think people are wondering right now.
Sure.
I think the number one question that people think when they are, this is maybe a new idea for them, or they haven't spent a lot of time listening to stories of migrant families coming to America. The first question that someone would ask would be like, Gina, I don't understand. Why would a woman, you know, give her child over to a man to get over here? Doesn't she love her daughter? And so that is a question that will plague a lot of people. So let's talk about that for a minute and talk about Julia's mom and what you learned through that situation and how we can learn about, I mean, you know, in your book, you said that there were in 2017, 36,000 unaccompanied minors crossed into the United States.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And so let's talk about that for a minute. And what does that look like for a family to come to the border and then a family get separated?
Yeah. So in Lupe's situation, and this is not everyone's, but her reasons for even trying to come was economic. This is certainly a lot of people's reason. But then there's other people who will try to come because they feel like their lives are being threatened with gang violence or domestic violence. So there's a couple of different reasons for why people come. And really, the decision is from every account that I've ever heard, this decision is never easy. Mm. This is never like, yes, I definitely want to go. Yes, this is the best thing for my family. It's usually, can I do this? Is it really worth it? Do I have any other options? Nobody really wants to learn a new language, a new culture. Nobody thinks, from the people I've talked to, no one thinks they're going to get rich quick. This is not what they're thinking. In Lupe's situation, she did not want to leave her children. She did not want to leave the boys behind. So she has three boys and then Julia is her daughter. She brought her daughter with her because the three boys were old enough to kind of take care of themselves. And they also had their grandma in the home too. So there's that going on, and grandfather in the home at the time. And so Lupe decided to bring her daughter. First of all, she's the only girl. And she was the youngest. So the idea was for her to come to the States for just a couple of months, make some money to pay for medicine that her grandfather needed, and then return. And so the thought was never to stay. It was only to be there for a little while and provide for her family. So, you know, a lot of these decisions are really based and motivated by, let's keep the family together. And I think that's one thing that we really have to remember when we look at those cases and say, oh, I would never do that, or how could they ever do that? I think most of us, when our family is, when it feels like their lives are on the line, we're going to do probably anything we can because we love our family so much.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I've learned a lot in the past, probably like 5, 6, 7 years of my life, is how important listening is. And, you know, I'm grateful that God let me do this job that I have, because I get to listen to stories all the time. Like, this is my job, listen to stories. And I learn so much. And I think the thing that I want people to know is like how important listening is to different stories. Because if you've never listened to a family like Lupe, if you've never listened to her story, you might have a false idea of what it looks like for women to come with their daughters to the United States. You know, right now in our current culture, if you've never listened to, you know, a Black or brown woman or man who has gone through what all Black and brown people in our country have gone through, then you don't understand what you're hearing. And so listening is so important. And you also talk about lamenting in your book. And I want to talk about that later, because I thought it was a really important chapter that you ended on. But just listening to people's story changes everything. I was able to travel down to the border with Tess, and we went to Juarez, right over the border in Texas. Mm-hmm. Where did Lupe and her daughter attempt to cross?
They crossed it McAllen.
Okay. In Texas. Mm-hmm. So I went down to El Paso. We went over to Juarez and heard a man's story. And I've shared it here on the show before, but a lot of similarities. It was a man. He had a wife and kids back home, and he was threatened his life, and he had to get away to save his family's life. And he was stuck at the border. This was back in, I think I went in like August of September of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he was stuck there trying to get over. And although I had read your book already, I was familiar with the work Tess is doing. I've read Sarah's book. So like, I'm listening. But when I sat with that man and heard his story and heard him cry about leaving his family and the things he said to me, I thought, I would do anything for my kids. Like, I would do anything for my kids. And that is what I learned on that trip, is that obviously it's not everybody.
Right.
And I have not had a conversation with everyone who has attempted.
Sure.
But hearing his story, I thought I would do what he did. So let's talk about what has been happening with what you've seen happening, even with Julia coming over with her stepdad and being separated. And we saw this in the news, I guess, back in 2018. Is that what we're looking at here? 2018 was the zero tolerance policy. So can you walk us and educate us a little bit on that, and then what that looks like today, 2 years later?
Sure. Yeah. So the zero tolerance policy was officially announced in April of 2018. However, we now know that it had started long before then. So it had started in June of 2017. So it went a full year, June 2017 until June 2018. And basically what was happening is that there was no tolerance for people who would cross in, and families were immediately separated. So some people probably maybe have seen the footage of actual families forcibly being separated. And when I traveled with Tess and Sarah, I got to see the spot and the place, the detention center, where processing center, where a lot of that happened. So if a child came in with an adult, they would come into this processing center and then they would be separated. So the children would go to one cage, basically, because they were like cages, and the adults would be in another one. And then what would happen is a lot of the children would then get placed into, like Julia did, Office of Refugee Resettlement, and be officially unaccompanied minors. But unaccompanied minors, as a label, says that they came unaccompanied, and that's not the case. including in Julia's case, because of the zero tolerance policy, but that's how they were processing everyone. So that was going on for a full year. Julia probably happened during that time because she had tried to cross at the end of October, beginning of November of 2017. So that had been happening for a while. Then Carlos was immediately deported and Julia came in by herself. The reason that the zero tolerance policy ended in a lot of ways was a ton of pressure from the public, including 3,000 of us women who were in this Not Without My Child campaign, constantly tweeting at and telling our representatives that this is unacceptable. Now, what's happening again is that currently families are being given what's called a binary option. And so they're telling the parents that they can either be separated from their child and their child can go into foster care or Office of Refugee Resettlement and the parent will stay in the detention center. Or they're saying, you can keep your child in there with you, but that's not the best option, right? Don't you want your child to be free?
So in that hope with the family choosing, if they did to stay in the detention center, their hope would then get asylum or go be deported. What are the two options?
It depends on the particular situation, but
and
they
also
can...
Gina, always correct my language if I say something wrong, because we learn here at the happy hour. So
yeah, that's good.
Giving you that.
That's good. So basically every family has the right or individual has the right when they approach a port of entry, which is the different ports along the border, they have the option to say, I'm here to seek asylum. However, the current administration has reduced significantly the number of asylum refugees that they're allowing in, especially those along the border. And so I'm not exactly sure what if they're even saying that that's an option right
now. Okay, got it.
Yeah. So what they're not informing the people of is this thing called the Flores Agreement. And the Flores Agreement says that children should not be held in detention centers for longer than 20 days. So what the administration is trying to do is trick them into separating so that parents will then get held in detention centers while they still follow the rules of the Flores Agreement. And so we're back at it again. We're trying to get a group of Christian women together who will again stand in the gap between, what is the UN called it government sanctioned child abuse. And really just press our senators because, there's tons of stuff going on right now in the world and lots for us to pay attention to. And we just really want people to know that this is happening and that we need to push against it again.
So what does that look like to stand in the gap?
We're working on a campaign that we're going to use the hashtags Don't Look Away and For Every Child. And really, we're standing on the idea, the story of Shipra and Puah in the Bible, in the old Exodus Old Testament, where they did not follow the laws of the land. And they said, no, this is not right. We will stand up for the life of children, right? That's what we need to do. And so we've got different action steps that we're working on putting together. Those women, showed us how to civilly disobey because it was right. And they followed, it says something like they followed the law of the Lord. And I think we need to remember that the law of God is certainly not always the law of the land, and we need to stand up for that. So if people follow me or follow that hashtag, they'll find all the information that they need to get involved. So when you're listening to this podcast, join in immediately. Go look on social media for the hashtags Don't Look Away and For Every Child. And we'll be in the middle of this campaign. It's going to go through June 22nd. And we're really going to put pressure on our representatives to change the law.
I love that. I love that. I'll be sharing that as well. If you don't know it, guys, I'm a Texas girl through and through. I've lived here most of my life. I was born here and I love traveling. Here's why I love traveling throughout Texas, because it has a vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities, which means there's an infinite number of different travel experiences. And no two travelers are exactly alike, and it means that no two trips should be either. If you're a beach person, well, you can have fun under the sun with Texas's 350 miles of coastline. If you're more of a rugged vacation type, there are campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. And foodies cannot get enough of Texas's world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex. Enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually led trip matched to their unique interests. Guys, come visit my state. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. Wherever you're starting, there's thousands of classes to get you moving. Whether that's beginner or advanced rides, feel-good live DJ rides, or artist-themed rides, they've got something for you. You guys, I've done the beginner rides a lot, and I'm not ashamed of that, and I've loved every single one. Peloton bike instructors keep you motivated from day one. In fact, I found a few of my favorites and I keep going back to the same instructors. They show you the basics, they'll help take the guesswork out of your workout and encourage you to build from there. Peloton entertainment keeps you moving. You can watch your favorite TV shows and live sports as you ride. Perfect for those days when you don't want to miss a thing. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
This seems like, and I don't want to, it seems like a hard time right now to be advocating for things. Do you feel that tension and pressure?
Yes, very much so.
How are you handling that in the middle? I mean, 2020 is going to go down in all of our lifetimes as like, what in the actual HE double hockey sticks is happening in our life? You know what I mean? And so it just feels like every day you wake up and go, there's something else. And, you know, I think a lot of people struggle with, where do I find my voice and where do I stand in the gap for who, for what? Yep. Do I need to stand in the gap for like coronavirus or Black Lives Matter or children being separated? And so how do you find that tension of really standing in the gap in this moment for this?
This past week, I've been working with some church leaders on, you know, really standing in the gap for Black Lives Matter, and then also doing this work as well. And I feel like, you know, when we talk about these demons that we fight, white supremacy is one of those large, what I feel like is a stronghold in this country. And immigration is racialized too. So for me, it feels like one kind of branch of this whole movement of all lives they have dignity that God has given us, and we need to be the ones standing up for it and fighting for it. I really believe that that is our call as Christians, no matter, you know, what theology we stand by. That seems to be very clear in the Bible, is that every single human being is given a God-given divine imprint, and we're the ones who stand up for that no matter what.
That's so good. I want to ask you another question. I'm thinking of my listeners who this is a new conversation for them. And, you know, I think that there wouldn't be many people who would say, I don't want to stand in the gap for children. Like, I think that like we can find a common ground, like children deserve life, love, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all the things. Like, this is good.
Yeah.
I think where a lot of people will struggle with this, Gina, and I would just like for you to encourage my listeners in how to lean in and listen and learn and really care about things happening at the border. And, you know, honestly, news is just such a cycle. Like, it's just like, I literally am like, is anyone talking about coronavirus anymore? Like, I don't even know, but it's like, it's heightened. Like, more people have it, but it's just news. That's how news works. Okay.
Yep.
And so honestly, there's not a lot in the news right now that I am seeing about issues at the border. And so can you even give us like some resources, some ideas, some information about how do we continue to have this on the forefront of our mind when the news isn't talking about it?
I would say that there are a couple of news stories on this, but not much. And that's kind of part of the thing, is that, you know, our attention is on so many different things that it's hard to stay up to date with this. And so we know from a couple of reports by different nonprofits that at least 350 unaccompanied minors were immediately turned away at the border. There's probably more than that because they're not actually reporting all of this. The agency doesn't necessarily have to report that. So those children are under 18 and they're being turned away at the border, which means there's no safety protocol in place, which means their lives are much more at risk to be trafficked.
There's assaulted. People waiting for them on the other side.
Yep.
I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I would say as far as things to follow or places to look, there's a couple of different things. So KIND is an organization that works specifically towards some of these ends, K-I-N-D, it's Kids in Need of Defense. RAICES, which is in Texas, R-A-I-C-E-S, another organization that does a lot of great immigration work. And then there's also the National Immigration Forum, American Immigration Council. There's a couple of different ones. And I've got links on my website to a lot of this stuff too. So I hope that people can pay attention. And definitely, if you're on social media and you can look up those hashtags, we'll have information coming from there too.
It's so great. I want to ask another question that I know some people are wondering. You know, you may feel like, oh, Jamie, I'm not equipped to answer this question, but this is really what people are, you know, good-hearted people will listen to this conversation and go, okay, well, Gina, what do you expect us to do? Like, what are we supposed to do? Just open our borders and let everybody in and just, you know, pour out our money for everybody. And that is a real concern for a lot of, especially conservative evangelical Christians in our country.
Yep.
What do you say to that, Gina?
I don't feel equipped to answer on the policy side, but I do feel equipped to answer as a Christian.
I like that. I'll take it as a Christian
okay.
for sure.
Cool. When I go back to the Old Testament and I think about the God of abundance who tells people, allow gleaning, like let's make provision for those who cannot provide for themselves. And I think about the God of abundance who taught people as he led them out of Egypt, he taught them to trust him every single day with manna and to not hoard it. I can't take the stand that says there's not enough in this country. And I really truly believe that empires will always tell us there's not enough. They will always tell us you're not enough. And they will always tell us there is not enough. You must produce more. And that's exactly what happened in Egypt. If you think about the Egyptians and what they were building and the Israelites and what they had to do, they constantly had to make more bricks, more bricks, more bricks, more bricks. It's this mentality that we have that I feel like is in direct contrast with who God and the God of abundance is. And he says, there's enough. Take a Sabbath day. You don't have to produce. It's going to be okay. And you can share what you have. And that's what leads me in any of these conversations.
I'm not equipped to handle policy either by any means, but I remember on the trip learning and listening to some women that were on the trip that actually do work in policy. So they're super smart, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I remember them talking about is not this idea of just like open all the borders and everything's free game, but to have systems in place that really care about people. And I think that's like this way that a lot of people can wrap their brain around is like, okay, I like don't want to just open up everybody, you know,
right,
we're gonna let
right.
everybody in because that idea scares so many people.
Mm-hmm.
But what if we were like, what if we had systems in place that actually cared about people and cared about keeping families together and cared about taking care of people? And so I think that is a happy medium too, to talk about of, you know, we're not asking to abolish all the things or whatever it might look like. But what we are asking as Christ followers to do is A, love people and everything you just said. Like that is the God that we serve, yes. But we're also asking just to be kind to people and to not separate families, you know?
Right.
And the worst comeback to that is like, well, they should just stay home. Why are they coming, you know? And again, proximity changes everything. And if you've never had a conversation or listened well to someone talk about that, it really is hard for you to know, which leads me to your very last chapter of your book, which you titled it Reflections. And in the last chapter of your book, you talk a lot about lamenting. And I think I agree. Your statement in here, it says, lament is a biblical discipline that we often ignore in white evangelicalism. Those of us in the dominant culture need to lean into lament, to learn from our brothers and sisters of color, and to be fearless when the injustices around us that daily affect them create an ugly emotional response. We have an affinity for all things beautiful and Instagrammable within the white church. This idol denies us the ability to walk with others through suffering. And I think that's what we're talking about here, is that proximity and that understanding. And so how in the past, however many years, even going back to when you lived in Mexico, however, wherever God has taken you along your journey, what have you learned through true lamenting over what's happening to people in our world that look different than you?
You know, I think until I read Prophetic Lament, I didn't really understand the process of lament. And as a writer, I didn't really understand that I could have a process to that. And in my book, I have a couple of laments that I've written out as an acrostic that was, again, just kind of following Sung Chan Ra's advice there, and then just kind of reading the Old Testament with new eyes on how they did do that, and Lamentation specifically. I think lament is hard because it requires us to see the world for what it is. It requires us to change our perspective, and it requires us to realize that we have, when I say we, I'm talking about white evangelicals, I think in general in America, I don't think that we have easy lives, but we have easier lives mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And when systems are set up specifically to promote us as white people, there's a lot of lament that will lead us to confession, and confession is scary. And I love that when we first talked, you said, I'm confessing stuff. I feel like the past week of, you know, going through this process and realizing just the pain and struggle with a lot of Black Americans that's so visible to us right now, it requires us to confess that we've been part of the problem. And I think lament allows us to see that. And if we don't lament first, then we'll just put like Band-Aids on stuff and we'll just say, oh, it's fine. It's not a big deal. It's fine. But lament actually has us sit in the pain and has us listen, like you're saying, to the stories that we don't want to hear. And it has us going to places that we don't necessarily want to go, and requires us to take a really good look at what our theology says about our anthropology, and helps us recognize, hey, if my theology says that anthropology is this way, and that's then making me be a certain way towards people that look differently than me, then my theology is wrong and I need to change that. And I think lament really helps us walk through that process. And like you said, proximity changes everything. And when you live around, when we lived in Mexico and we live around people who are constantly struggling to make ends meet, and we ourselves were constantly struggling to make ends meet because missionary support would fluctuate from month to month, you start to realize this is normal for the good majority of the world. And that's something to lament.
I think lamenting and confessing the way that you're talking about is maybe the key to a shift in what we're seeing in our world. And that's not a new concept. I didn't come up with that. You didn't come up with that. This is like Bible.
Right.
Jesus, right. Like God, he's telling us to do this. But I see that even as you were speaking of that, and this is not a new concept for me, it made me teary-eyed because I thought lamenting and sitting in someone else's pain is really hard. Because you have to really look and assess and be like, A, do I care about their pain?
Right.
B, have I caused it at all? And I mean like at all. Have I been a part of any kind of system that has caused this?
Yeah.
And then three, do I care to see any change? And I think right. those are really, really difficult questions to ask ourselves.
Yep.
And so many of us in this world, we have the privilege to not have to ask those.
That's right.
We
That's
don't
so good.
Like I would never, I don't have to ask those in my life. Doesn't ever change.
Right.
And so I think asking ourselves to step into someone's pain and lament with them and see and reflect and then ask ourselves those questions takes a lot of energy.
It
takes
does.
A lot of purpose. It takes a lot of emotional pain. It takes a lot of just becoming low to lift up other people. And humans are prideful people and not something that we enjoy doing. And so thank you for your encouragement in that. And I know that that's going to bless a lot of people.
One of the things that I think lament and confession really requires of us is that question about change. Like, do we want change? And then the following question is, will we sacrifice for it? And that's where I think, you know, I'm seeing different organizations and churches and leaders confess. But my question is your confession costing you anything? Because if it's not, then I'm not sure it's actual confession. I think it's just performance confession. And there's a big difference there. And lament really helps us decipher between the two.
And I think we've seen a lot of performance confession in leaders. And like, let's just all admit it in ourselves. Like, we've all lived the performance confession. And I think you can only do that for so long.
Yep.
You just can't, that can't stand. It can't withstand.
That's right. That's right.
Gina, thank you. I want everyone to check out your book, Separated by the Border, and follow you on Instagram. And when this show comes out, if you're listening to it within the first couple of days, you have an opportunity to get just to jump in. You and we'll put all of those hashtags in our show notes. And we'll also put all those hashtags on my personal Instagram as well so people can find them.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
All right, I've got to do what I always do. What are you loving and what are you reading?
So right now I'm loving iced coffee. It's getting me through the day.
Now, okay, so I have a couple of questions about iced coffee because I love iced coffee as well. But what I've learned is you can't just make coffee and pour it over ice.
No. Or
do you like make legit iced coffee?
No, I don't. I do make legit coffee, hot coffee.
Okay. Uh-huh.
It takes a while in the morning. So that's like the first cup. And then throughout the day, I just buy the cheap stuff from the grocery store.
And then you buy it already. Okay.
Yeah. And my husband is like really just disturbed by the fact that I do this because we ran a coffee shop in Mexico.
I was going to say, y'all started a coffee shop in Mexico. Yeah.
It's really quite embarrassing, but it's getting me through quarantine. So I'm going to
love iced coffee. Yes. Okay. What else?
And then what am I reading? I'm reading a couple of different things. I'm actually reading way too many things right now. Marlena Graves has a new book coming out, The Way Up Is Down, which has been really, really beautiful. And then there's a book called Rediscipling the White Church by David Swanson. I'm also reading, which is really cool because it speaks to practices and actual discipleship that needs to change within the white church for us to really understand the racial divides that are occurring. And then George Yancey has a book called Backlash, which is deep and intense. He is a Yale professor, I think it's Yale, who got quite a bit of flack, not just flack, hate mail and stuff from people when he started talking about the best that we can be as white people. So this is a black man. He talked about the best that we can be as white people is anti-racist racists. And so that's been a really sitting with someone in pain. It's a very painful book to read for sure.
Okay.
I
love it. You know, I haven't done this in a while and I haven't told people what I'm reading in a while. So how about I tell you what I'm reading
too? Oh, that'd be great.
Okay. So I'm reading actually two books right now. The first one is by Kate Bowman. Do you know who she is?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you read her book?
Everything, not yet.
Okay. Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I Believed. I hope I said that right. Have you read that book yet?
Not yet, but it's on my, I really, really want to read it.
I've been reading it. It's my I call it my bathtub read. I don't know if you have things like this. Like you read this here, this there. This is what I'm reading in the bathtub, which is weird, but I read a lot in the bathtub. I've cried through a lot of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's her story of walking through cancer and it's been good. And then I started on the beach, The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead.
Oh, wow.
I cannot remember. It won the Pulitzer Prize, all kinds of stuff. And so I'm diving into that.
And is that nonfiction?
Fiction.
Okay.
On the Underground Railroad. And so it is very descriptive in character. And I honestly am struggling getting into it, but I'm determined to stick it out. You know, it's one of those books where I'm gonna stay with it. I'm here for the long haul.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do it. So I'm into that. Do you read fiction a lot?
I have been trying to do that more because it really does help just shut my brain down because I'm a 5 on the Enneagram. I'm constantly thinking about stuff all the time. So my brain needs certain things to turn off and fiction usually helps that out. So I haven't lately, but I need to get back into something.
Okay. I'm going to tell you what to read. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Have you read anything by Kristen Hanna?
No.
It's called The Great Alone.
Okay. I'm gonna write it down.
It's a big book. I devoured it.
Yeah.
It took me probably about 75 pages to get, it's very character development at the beginning as well. Gina, I finished this book probably 3 weeks ago. I found myself the other day wondering what she was doing, the character. That's how you know it is a good book. And so The Great Alone by Kristen Hanna, set in Alaska it spans over a lot of years. I think it starts around the 60s.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I will definitely check it out.
Really, really good. Gina, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I have been looking forward to chatting with you for a while. Thank you for writing down your story and the story of your friends in Honduras. Do you still keep in contact with them?
Yep. all the time.
I thought that you would. Thank you to them for letting you write their story and share it with us because it has made me a better person from reading your words and Lupe's journey and Julia's journey and everything that you guys walk through together. And so thank you for that. And thank you for being a voice for what's happening and for not letting us forget what's going on. Because like we said, the news cycle can be a little bit crazy and you're helping us remember what's still happening with children. Who are made in the image of God at the border. And so thank you for that. If we can ever do anything for you at the happy hour, you let us know. We're Gina Thomas fans. Okay, have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Today's show was edited and mixed by the team at Podshaper, and the music was developed for the show by Matt Graham. Show notes are written by Quinn Pearson, and the whole thing is organized by Lindsay Sweeney. Next week, my guest is Anjali Pascal. Guys, enjoy your week. Share the show with a girlfriend. Have a virtual happy hour. Maybe you can have a real happy hour with a friend. Please join the conversation about child separation at the border. Check out the hashtags, hashtag don't look away and hashtag for every child.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.